Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 39-year-old Tom Brady will play in his 7th Super Bowl this weekend. Roger Federer and Serena Williams, both 35, just won the Australian Open, Grand Slams. They're hardly old by ordinary standards, but they certainly are in the sports world. How do they do it? This hour On Point, age-defying athletes and what they can teach us. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's with all the aging veterans in the sports limelight lately? What's their secret? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we'll talk Super Bowl halftime shows, the best, the worst, and what makes a standout performance. But first, to those, old athletes. By professional standards, Sunday, 35-year-old Roger Federer beat 30-year-old Rafael Nadal to win the Australian Open. Federer found out he'd won after Nadal was called for a review on the match point. Here is the decision.
It's in! Victory for Federer! He's champion in Australia for the first time! And it's match number 18 for the Swiss maestro!
Well, you can barely hear it over all the roaring there. 35 years old, and he won it. Serena Williams, also 35, and beating at the very tip-top these two, her 36-year-old sister, Venus. The win gave Serena a record 23 Grand Slam titles, allowing her to pass Steffi Graf, who won 22 Grand Slams. Here's the scene after Serena Williams won.
And Serena smashes Steffi's record. It's number 23. An iconic number. And like Michael Jordan, she's in rare air. The sisters embrace. They share a moment. What a special moment. A moment we might not see again in history.
Serena Williams' victory there, straight from Australia. Like Michael Jordan, she's in rare air. Joining me from Houston is Jason Gay, sports columnist for The Wall Street Journal. He's been watching Federer and Serena Williams, has an eye out on Super Bowl-bound Tom Brady. Jason Gay, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hey, thanks.
What's up with all these, I mean, I hate to say it, it's only 35 and 39, but these relative geezers in pro sports coming right out on top. What's happening, Jason?
It is a geezer revolution, isn't it? And when you think about tennis, we think oftentimes that it's a sport where players become very good at a very young age. We've mm-hmm. seen teenage champions before, and it's a sport that's rife with burnout, both physically, mentally. Players get themselves out of the game sometimes in their mid to late 20s. So what the Williams sisters are doing, what Federer has done, what Nadal has done, is really spectacular. It's unprecedented in terms of just wire-to-wire excellence. And for Federer's case, he's coming off of really the most prolonged injury break of his career. And I think this is indicative of is a real revolution in terms of training and fitness for, you know, mature athletes, so to speak. We have a much greater access now to the kind of information and recovery science that athletes need to excel at a high level. And, you know, it's no longer, you know, we always say like 40 is the new 30 and 20 is the new 10. In sports, we're seeing more and more of these older champions, and we'll see it certainly on Sunday with Brady.
And then, Tom Brady coming in at 39 years old to the Super Bowl, and of course, he's been there again and again. Just how unusual is it to have a 39-year-old quarterback competing at that level?
It's unprecedented. We've had old quarterbacks before. Peyton Manning, in fact, won a Super Bowl last year before retiring. But what makes Brady so special is that there appears to be no attrition of his skills. He's as good and dangerous a quarterback now as he was when he entered the league. And he doesn't seem to show any signs of slowing down. There's noise about him wanting to play not just into his early 40s, but maybe into his mid-40s. And you look at the guy and you see the sort of physical specimen that he remains, and it's hard to doubt it.
Here's Tom Brady talking on Tuesday with reporters about his plans to keep playing football into the foreseeable future.
I've enjoyed every minute of it, and, you know, I still want to keep playing. And, you know, after this game, you know, I'll probably take a week or two off and then get back to work.
He said, why would I stop now? And he talked a little bit about his body and how he takes care of it. Here was Tom Brady on Tuesday.
Your body for an athlete is what your asset is. If your body breaks down, you can't perform, then you have no job. So, you know, I've tried to learn the right ways to take care of your body and to, you know, with the kinds of, you know, I've talked about nutrition and hydration, the type of workouts that I do, the pliability work that I do, you know, I think is the reason why I'm still playing.
Nutrition, hydration, pliability work. Jason Gay, are these just freak sort of instances of Roger and Serena and Tom Brady at their age, at the top of their sports?
Or
do you really see a general trend here toward, hey, go on, go on?
I think there is a general trend. I mean, obviously, these are really, really special individuals. But in Tom Brady's case, you listen to the things that he's saying. He almost sounds like an anti-aging guru at this point. And in fact, he is starting to set up a business. There's sort of an entrepreneurial side of Tom Brady to actually put this kind of fitness preparation, nutrition, and all that available to regular consumers. And we saw it earlier last year. Tom Brady released a $200 nutrition manual, which includes such savory recipes as avocado ice cream.
Yum. Hey, could be good. Could be great.
We laugh at it, but, you know, listen, it's hard to argue with the result.
It sure is. I mean, we heard his personal chef, who just cooks for Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen, of course, supermodel, and his wife. This was Alan Campbell. He was on Zolak and Bertrand, a Boston radio show. This is last year, talking about a little bit of the quarterback, star quarterback's diet. Here he's explaining Brady why he rarely eats tomatoes.
Tomatoes, they do. They're classified under nightshades, right? So nightshades would be eggplant, peppers, tomatoes. So there is. In some people, these nightshades can cause inflammation.
I mean, Tom Brady doesn't mess around on the diet front, Jason. White sugar, forget about it. You know, just casual carbs, forget about it. Alan Campbell there saying 80% of what he and Gisele eat is vegetables. If it's not organic, they don't use it. Whole grains, brown rice, quinoa, millet, beans, 20% lean meats. But it's all grass-fed, organic, and, you know, I mean, right down the line. Sugar, forget it. Sugar is the death of people, his personal chef says.
Listen, I want to confirm that my addiction to tomatoes is why I've never won a Super Bowl. But what's fascinating about what Tom Brady is doing, and if you look inside the Patriots locker room, the trickle-down effect upon his teammates is very clear. You have a lot of the younger guys, you know, modeling themselves after Tom Brady. I mean, it's very easy if you're a 25-year-old guy to think you're going to play forever. But once you start to turn that corner into your 30s, you know, football, we know, has a very, very, it's a dangerous sport. It has a very short career span. Tom Brady has bucked every trend. So I think the influence that he has upon younger players, you know, a lot of those guys are turning to that diet. A lot of those guys are turning to the kind of fitness program he does. Tom Brady doesn't lift weights at 39.
He does not lift weights.
Yeah, we think of like strength training to be such a key part of an NFL player's preparation, but Tom Brady is not interested in that. He's not doesn't want to add bulk. He's a smaller man than he was when he was drafted in the NFL.
I mean, he heaves that ball down the field. I'm always very happy to report that Tom Brady and I are the same height and weight. Nevertheless, he doesn't have to lift some weights to throw those long bombs.
No, I think what, you know, again, sort of the revolution we're seeing in sports science, I think that muscle mass is less of a priority as opposed to flexibility and recovery. You know, recovery is a huge part of this. We thought so long about training as hard as possible. There's so much sort of machismo culture around training, the idea of like lifting the most, running the most, climbing the most, and so on. But what we know now is that equally important is giving yourself time to recover and, again, sort of preparing yourself nutritionally, hydration-wise, in terms of doing that as well.
Jason Gay with the Wall Street Journal standby. I want to talk in just a second here with Dara Torres, the amazing American swimmer, 12-time Olympic medalist, won 3 silver medals in 2008 when she became the oldest swimmer to compete in the history of the Olympics. She was 41 years old.
She joked that she had, when she made the team in 08, she didn't know she'd made it because she couldn't read the scoreboard. Here's the then 41-year-old talking with reporters.
I was shocked when I touched the wall. I could not see the scoreboard. I think, you know, with my age, and I'm looking and I'm like, what does that say, you know? And then I heard the announcer and I could kind of see it like blurry, but they need to make those numbers a little bigger for people my age. So I didn't really know actually that I won at first. I'm shocked. I don't think it's really hit me yet that I'm on a fifth Olympic team.
And not just on the team, but almost won gold, missed it by the tiniest fraction of a second. Dara Torres was 41, three silver medals in the 2008 Olympics. She joins us now from Boston. Dara Torres, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, how you doing?
We're great. What do you think of Tom Brady at 39, of Federer and Serena Williams at 35? You were way beyond. So are they for the norm. Is it weird? Is it where we're going, Dara?
Well, I'm listening to Jason talk about, you know, Tom Brady, and the stuff that he's doing is very similar to what I did to be able to compete at an older age, which is not put a lot of bulk on, eat properly, recover, make sure you get, you know, stretched, and that's... You sort of have to have a different approach when you're older, and I'm sure, I don't know what Serena's doing, you know, at her age and stuff, but listening about Tom Brady, it was so similar to what I did to be able to make another fifth Olympic team.
And you brought those great victories. Was that about sheer body fitness, or is it about wisdom and savvy, too? Does age bring an advantage beyond staying, you know, in shape?
Well, I think age works to your advantage mentally, because I'll never forget walking into the ready room where the athletes have to be 20 minutes before they go out and swim. And I'm walking in seeing the other seven finalists in my event. And, you know, you walk in there and you're thinking, what are you supposed to say to them? Like, you're sitting in there, you see a 15-year-old, a 17-year-old. And
you're 41.
Yeah, I'm 41, and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, these kids think that the most important thing they're ever going to do is at this moment, mm-hmm. and the most important thing to me is at home, which was my 2.5-year-old. And so it puts kind of things into perspective, but I realized when I walked into that room and was getting ready to swim my final individual race, mm-hmm. I realized that I have such an advantage over these kids because I've been there, done that, have the experience, know what to expect. Doesn't mean I wasn't as nervous as they were, but I knew how to deal with it. And I think in that retrospect, age works to your advantage, at least mentally. Yeah. But it's tough. It's tough physically.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Tom Brady at 39 in the Super Bowl, Roger Federer and Serena Williams winning Grand Slams at 35, looking at age-defying athletes and how they do it, what they can teach us. The great Dara Torres is with us, the great American swimmer, 12-time Olympic medalist, won three silvers at age 41, oldest swimmer ever to compete in the history of the Olympics, joins us today. Jason Gay is here, sports columnist for the Wall Street Journal. You can join us. Do we have a trend here? And what's it take for a veteran athlete to be the champ in the game and number one? How do these athletes do it? If you watch Serena, Roger, Tom Brady, how can we learn from their longevity in their sports? Here was Federer last weekend, Australian Open, Grand Slam winner, said he was thankful for a lot of things, including being able to continue playing at his age.
You know, I'm so thankful to Peter Carter and Tony Roach and just the people's, you know, I guess my popularity here and their support, that I can still do it at my age after not having won a slam for almost 5 years.
And Serena Williams talking here about beating her 36-year-old sister, she's 35, to win the Australian Open on Saturday. Talking with ESPN here, talking about how many times they've played each other, talking about being 30 fun. 31, they asked? No, 30 fun.
This was a lot different because it was for so much. It was so much riding on this on both our ends. Venus mm-hmm. was trying to get to her eighth Grand Slam and me obviously trying to get to 23. But also we're both 30 fun, you know, so we're just trying. We were like.
I like that.
We're like, you
say
know.
Say that again, 31?
30 fun.
30 fun. Okay.
Mid 30 fun. So we were just, it's a big moment for us.
Forget even 30 something, they're 30 fun. And finally, Tom Brady talked in December with WEEI, said no reason to stop now. 39, why stop?
Why would I stop now? I worked, you know, to get to this point, and this is, I think, when I can really capitalize and really try to, you know, make the most of, you know, everything that I've learned over the years. I've been fortunate to be around and So I hope I can keep doing it. I certainly think I can.
The great swimmer Dara Torres is with us, winning Olympic medals at age 41. Dara, take us into the real particulars here. What did you really find to be more difficult or to really need attention as those numbers ticked by on the birthday calendar, you know, and you kept competing at the top level?
Yeah, but I also took many breaks. These guys are competing, you know, year after year, and there were about two or three different times where I retired, where I really thought I was done, and then missed a sport and came back. So my body at least got a lot of breaks and rest. I think the biggest thing that I would say, I would assume that we all have learned over the years, like Federer and Serena and Tom Brady, is to listen to your body, and that you can't do what you did when you were in your 20s. I mean, I heard you talk about Tom Brady not lifting weights anymore. I mean, I barely lifted weights either, but then, you know, my first thought process was, well, if I don't lift weights and I'm not strong like the young kids, how am I going to be fast?
Yeah.
You know, and it, that's not how it happens. It's more about efficiency and having some strength, but being efficient and also being flexible and being able to recover.
What about diet? I mean, Tom Brady is very specific here. No nightshades, no tomatoes, peppers, mushrooms, eggplants, no coffee, no caffeine, no fungus, mushrooms, no dairy, no sugar. Are you as religious about all that?
No.
Okay.
I think I'm more religious about the outside of my body and what I do to recover and what I do to train. But as far as what I put in my body, I had an eating disorder in college, so there was a long time where I was very fearful of foods.
Uh-huh.
And so for me personally, I don't deprive myself, but I'm very portion oriented. So
yeah.
If there's something I want, I'll take a couple bites or, you know, kind of satisfy my cravings and then move on from that.
When you look at Federer or Serena Williams, Jason Gay, what do you see in particular in them about how they take care, how they maintain?
You know, I think that they have it dialed in this respect. They have been doing this for a very long time. They know what it takes to prepare. Both of them at their age are playing reduced schedules. They're not going out there and
yep.
playing every tournament. They're not playing 100, you know, matches a year. They are trying to be selective in terms of the events that they do. I mean, Federer was coming into the Australian Open having not played a significant tournament since July. I mean, that's an incredible layoff in his sport. But again, that sort of experience, knowing your body, you know, being able to listen to it, and, you know, let's face it, a certain degree of luck is important here, too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You consider something like football, you know, this is a sport where someone else is trying to take you down. And Tom Brady has also been the beneficiary of having some very good offensive lines, which have protected his body over the years as well.
Let's go to Brian in Canton, Ohio. Brian, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Dara Torres and Jason Gay.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Hi, Dara.
Hi.
Oh, hi, Dara. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hi.
What do you say, Brian?
Well, going back to what Jason had just said about kind of having things dialed in, I'm curious, you know, if it's maybe a little bit disingenuous of these athletes who have been working so long and so hard to kind of get their bodies to this kind of peak physical performance to kind of go and sell, like, different dietary aids or even diet plans. I know Tom Brady isn't the first and probably not be the last.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt there's any ill intent involved, but I just wondered if they had any comments to that effect.
I mean, do you think that they win this longevity through their own efforts and diet, or do you think it's just genetic, Brian?
I think genetics have a lot to play with it. I mean, there are definitely more endomorphs on the field than there are exos, so... or vice versa. I can't get
yeah,
straight.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever the case.
Dara, how about it? Genetics? Are you just blessed? Are these other great athletes just blessed? And, you know, is this something you can sell to the rest of the public that would work for them?
It's funny. When I wrote one of my books, I think people had the expectations of looking like I look if they follow my routine and my I had a book out, a fitness book, and eating properly, health and fitness book. And so, you know, I tell people I've been doing this my whole life, and this is sort of how I made up. And genetically, I was very blessed. And, you know, in my book, you can get to be the best that you can be. And so I don't think people should have expectations that if someone is using something and they're endorsing it, that they'll be just like Tom Brady or just like Serena Williams. I think that that a lot of athletes that endorse products endorse them because they really do believe in them and it works for them. I particularly would not endorse something unless I tried it and liked it. So I don't know. I can't talk for the other athletes, but I think some has to do with definitely genetics. Some has to do with attitude and hard work and sacrifice and dedication.
Jason, what about among elite athletes? Do you see, you know, a sort of a general capacity to go this long distance, or do some just, whether by genetics or by lifestyle or by diet, they just drop out in their late 20s, 30s?
Well, I think it's the physical wear and tear is the main reason that people leave their sport, and also the mental side of this as well. I think there's a mental fitness aspect which is really important. But, you know, listen, we are all familiar with the spectacular salaries that exist in big professional sport, and even things like the Olympics have been revolutionized in terms of the professionalization, the ability for athletes such as Dara to focus on the sport. You know, generations ago, that was not terribly common, but now nowadays, athletes have the ability to sort of make this their life, make this their profession, and their knowledge and their sort of background in the sport and having done it before. I think of an athlete like Kristen Armstrong, who won the gold medal in the women's time trial cycling this summer in Rio, 43 years of age. What's interesting about it, she's won gold for the last three Olympiads, and she had retired twice, and I think she just has that sort of innate knowledge, plus the physical, plus the training, the knowledge, all that combination, I think, is available in a much wider scale than it once was.
It's just great to see that span of viability at that top level really stretch out. It amazes some of them. Here's Michael Phelps talking about you, Dara. About how he looked up to you, as he's joking about you being a mother figure to him, talking about you with his coach, Bob Bowman.
You know, Dara, yeah, well, as I call her, my mom, you know, at 41, she's what, 41, right? 41 with a kid.
Don't make it sound that old.
It's extremely impressive.
It is extremely, it was and is extremely impressive. missed the gold medal by, what was it, 100th of a second in the 50-meter freestyle in 2008 at age 41. Here you were talking with Oprah about that later in the year.
1/100th of a second, what is that?
You can't even blink that fast.
No.
I had every thought went through my head, like, what could I have done better? But I called my coach who was watching in the hospital, and he said, you know, Dara, I watched your race 5 times. There's really nothing else you could have done. But I keep thinking, yes, there had to have been something I could have done.
But you did it.
Is it weird to be out there, Dara, and have Michael Phelps thinking of you as mom, calling you mom?
Well, you know why he does is because his first Olympics, which people forget because he placed 5th, but he was 15 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I was 33, he was 15, and that's why he started calling me mom, because he was the youngest boy on the team, and I was the oldest woman in 2000 at his first Olympic Games. So that's where the whole mom thing kind of came about, and then he just continued calling me mom.
Oh, it's just fantastic. Gail in Fish Creek, Wisconsin. Gail, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to share about one guy who is actually 54, and he's still riding his...
riding what, Gail? Riding what?
Horse.
Horses.
Bronc riding.
Broncos.
Bull riding.
Bronco.
Bulls.
Bull riding.
Oh, bull riding, okay.
Bull riding.
Okay, and is he good at it?
Bronc bull.
Is he good at it?
He's 54 years old. Greg Castile of Colorado.
So is he good at it? Is he as President Trump would say, a winner?
Yeah, he's been riding since he's 13 years old.
Okay, riding Broncos and bulls at 54. We're raising the bar higher and higher here. Saranac, thank you, Gail. Saranac Lake, New York. Katie, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just had to call in. I've lived here about 15 years now. I used to be a competitive athlete myself, and I am surrounded by people in their 50s, 60s plus, but it's still completely physical. It's why I love living here. And by completely physical, I mean competing the Ironman, skiing up White Face every other day, which is our local ski mountain, you know, on your skis. The competitive, the 90-miler, a lot of the best paddlers are 50 years old and plus. I did the 90-miler for quite a few years. So I just had to call in because I really do feel like if we are redefining what it means to be getting older and being athletic.
Absolutely.
I love the athletes that you have on the show. Dara, I mean, talk about a role model. It is about how you take care of your body, and I really do feel it's a different mindset today, and I'm living proof in this area of what it means to be athletic as we get older.
Katie, keep it rolling there, 50, 60, 70, and
awesome.
Completely physical. There's a great phrase. Hey, Dara, Jason Gay, stand by. I've got Sean Arndt with us. He's director of the graduate program in kinesiology and applied physiology at Rutgers University. Director of the Rutgers Center for Health and Human Performance, thinks a lot about stretching out that completely physical way just as long as he can. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So what's your advice here? I mean, Dara doesn't seem to need advice. She's winning silver, almost gold at 41. But for listeners who are, you know, athletes or just want to be active and want to extend that, they look at Tom Brady and Roger and Serena and think, I'd like to do that. What's the formula, Sean?
Yeah, I think Jason hit on it a bit earlier in terms of some of the genetic that goes into this, and there's a huge part of it in terms of how people respond. But I think what you look at when you start looking at this pattern of these athletes that are older, and it's kind of funny to use that when we're talking about mid-30s and
it
even Garrett.
It's all relative.
It really is. It gives you an idea of how fickle the window in sports success really is.
Yeah.
But I think when you start to look at this, the thing you have to realize is most of these people we're talking about were able to avoid major injury. Mm-hmm. You know, and if it did come, they recovered from it very quickly. And you know, I think Dara's point about the recovery and even her sort of semi-retirements at different points, it gives you a break. And I think that what people need to understand is a lot of what goes into this is being able to sustain what you do over time. So it's not a lot of, you know, peaks and valleys and this and that, but it's sort of that continued progression that you see. And, you know, I think the good thing too is as people get active later and, you know, you might see some of these athletes almost appear to peak later in their career versus earlier, is some of it's you get smarter. There's no question. A lot of it is the science has really advanced even in the last decade with what we have from monitoring tools, you know, ranging from heart rate, GPS, biomarkers, the things we know about diet and how critical that is. You can't outrun a bad diet. You know, so you start to put all these things together. And I think even if somebody starts later in life, it's kind of one of those, it's never too late. But sure, from a peak performance standpoint, you know, there's a window. And I think when you start seeing that window close, you even take Brady towards the end of his career. At some point, it's towards the end of your career.
Yeah.
And I think you really start to pay attention to the little things because you don't want that window to close. And all of a sudden, you find out those little things, if you were doing them all along, really extends the duration over which you can be at your peak.
Jason, Brady's up against, of course, the Atlanta Falcons quarterback, Matt Ryan, who's 31 this weekend. Do you see an age factor in that matchup, Jason?
None. I mean, it's kind of funny. You would think that Ryan would have a tremendous advantage being a younger player with fewer reps. But if anything, I think Matt Ryan looks at Tom Brady as a role model, as somebody that he would love to emulate and certainly would love to be playing at the age of 39. And just to add on top of what a caller said a moment ago, one thing that I see all the time in terms of, you know, reader reaction and so on, the stuff that we do at the Journal, is there is a real revolution in sort of masters athletes in this country, especially in endurance sports. You see it 50, 60, 70-year-old athletes, 80-year-olds sometimes. We had a 105-year-old man in France set an hour record last month. People are defying the age clock, not just at the elite level like Dara, but in their sort of every ordinary athlete life on weekends.
Dara, you're not 41 anymore. You're 40, well, you tell us, but are you still out there in the pool? Do you still like to get in there against the youngins and see if you can mix it up?
You know, I'm actually almost 50 in 2 months, so I'm
right on.
I'm definitely middle-aged. But, yeah, you know, it's funny because I go to the pool, and, you know, there's a lot of guy swimmers there, and they're always trying to race you. But I tell a coach, I'm like, look, don't even put the stopwatch on me. I just want to chill. I'm just here for exercise. But I took a rowing class this morning with a 20-something-year-old and a 30-something-year-old and trying to, like, look over at their monitors and see what they're doing. And just this dang competitiveness in me just never goes away, you know. So I feel like I haven't really mellowed that much over the years. I think being competitive and being an elite athlete, I think it's always inside of you. It's just a matter of trying to tame it every now and then.
What do you look out? Do you hope to, I don't know, be out there competing in some silverbacked mama race when you're 60, when you're 70?
I don't. You know what? I'm sort of over, at least in the pool, racing.
Yeah.
I just really enjoy it for exercise and, you know, just going there and just getting a little aerobic work in, and that's it. I mean, I have no intentions of ever going back in a pool and racing anyone again. I think I've done it for enough years and it's kind of out of my system now.
You've proven yourself so wildly, so beautifully, so many times. And what a pleasure to have you with us today. Dara Torres.
Thank you.
12-time Olympic medalist. Thanks so much for being with us, Dara.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you. Sean Arndt, come back and talk with us more about this. It's really great. Everybody wants to keep it going and going. There at the director for Rutgers Center for Health and Human Performance. Sean, thanks very much for being with us today.
I love being on. Thanks for having me.
And Jason Gay with us from Houston. Super Bowl is coming. Sports columnist for the Wall Street Journal. Jason, it's always absolutely great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Stay active, Jason. Stay at the top of your peak performance for a long time, all right? We'll come back and talk about Super Bowl halftimes. What works, what doesn't, and what may be coming from Lady Gaga. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This year's Super Bowl halftime headliner, Lady Gaga. She joins a long list of big names with big personalities who have taken the field at Super Bowl halftime. Some performances have landed better than others. Prince, Michael Jackson, Beyoncé all celebrated. Coldplay, not so much. The last time the Super Bowl was in Houston was when the Janet Jackson nipple came out. There was uproar. What can we expect this time around? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. What do you think makes a great halftime show? What makes a performance a dud? We're at 800-423-TALK. And very happy to be so. Maeve McDermott joins us right now from USA Today, entertainment editor there. Maeve McDermott, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you here. So, Lady Gaga's coming. Do we have any idea? I heard something about she was going to dance on the roof of the stadium in Houston. Do we know?
Yeah. So, there were rumors that she is coming in from the ceiling of the arena. She gave a press conference yesterday in Houston for the NFL, and she didn't totally debunk that rumor. She said it was a very athletic performance. So I think that we're going to be seeing all the big props and over-the-top visuals that we saw with Katy Perry a few years back.
Maeve, who decides who's going to perform at Super Bowl halftime?
So, I mean, it's a decision of the NFL. Over the past few years, we've kind of seen them move away from, you know, the legacy rock acts like, you know, Bruce Springsteen, the Rolling Stones, The Who, Tom Petty, all of which have done really well, kind of more towards these really big pop names.
I want to go back through this a little bit. There was a time when Super Bowl halftimes were not such a big deal. They might have, you know, safer acts like New Kids on the Block or even just Up With People. And then back in 1992, you had the In Living Color put on an alternative halftime show on another network and got more than 20 million viewers away from the Super Bowl. That drove them crazy the next year out. It was Michael Jackson, right?
Yeah, so when Fox aired In Living Color up against the Super Bowl, their viewership fell 22% after halftime. So they basically wanted to hold on to this 18 to 34 demographic. So really the modern halftime show, as we know, it started with Michael Jackson. Yesterday at her press conference, Lady Gaga said she talked about how formative watching Michael Jackson perform at the Super Bowl was for her. So yeah, you know, he only played four songs, which is not what we expect from a modern halftime show. But in the years since, you know, before then, it, you know, there were marching bands playing, there were the Rockettes. It was kind of like a halftime you'd see at any other event, and he completely transformed that.
Super Bowl, Pasadena, 1993. He sang Black or White, sang Heal the World, sang Billie Jean.
We'll be right back.
Maeve McDermott is entertainment editor at USA Today. And there he was. They had to talk him into it. It wasn't. It hadn't been seen as a venue for his what his tier of performer.
No, and apparently he originally didn't want to do it, and they actually had to explain to him what the Super Bowl was before he performed.
Oh, that's amazing.
But in the end, he really went for the fact that there was a worldwide audience tuning in, and that was really attractive to him.
What about since then? Think about what's been seen as great, what's been seen as a dud. What makes a great Super Bowl halftime performance these days, Mae?
So it really comes down to the spectacle, the choices of the songs, and the special guests. And so, you know, performances that people love to talk about as kind of iconic ones, you know, Prince is an obvious one, his 2007 halftime performance. He played it in the middle of this huge downpour in Miami. He covered Jimi Hendrix. He covered the Foo Fighters. He ended with this really elegiac version of Purple Rain. People also point to U2's performance. They played in 2002. It was the first performance after the 9/11 tragedy. And, you know, they really showed, you know, in case Lady Gaga's looking to make a political statement that unites and rather, you know, instead of divides, they U2 performed in front of this big screen that scrolled through the names of the victims of the attacks. And they played Where the Streets Have No Name, the big, powerful, moving song. And then Bono famously ended by opening his jacket to reveal an American flag.
Yeah.
So, you know, people love to talk about U2's as this really powerful, uniting moment.
New Orleans, Super Bowl 2002, U2. U2 in 2002. Of course, that was a moment, Maeve, where people were looking to be unified. 9/11 had pulled the country together, and U2 stayed right on that wave, helped even further with that. Now we're in a very different kind of moment, a more polarized moment. Even after the election, Lady Gaga has been pretty political at times in her career. Any hint of where she may go on the political front, Maeve?
So yesterday at the press conference, she was asked about that, and she kind of said something along the lines of, you know, I'll be supporting what I've always supported in my career, which is inclusion and equality and, like, the spirit of America. So I don't think it's not a matter of if she makes a political statement. I think it's a matter of how far she wants to go. But from her comments, it doesn't sound like, you know, she's going to stop her song and make an anti-Trump rant. She's always kind of relied on this very powerful and positive messaging, you know, you were born this way. So I think that she is going to focus more on a positive, uplifting message than, you know, some more fiery rhetoric. But
we'll see.
It really does, you know, it depends.
It's Lady Gaga after all. We'll see. Here she was this week talking about what she may bring to the halftime performance.
The only statements that I'll be making during the halftime show are the ones that I have been consistently making throughout my career. I believe in a passion for inclusion. I believe in the spirit of equality and the spirit of this country as one of love and compassion and kindness. So my performance will uphold those philosophies.
Maeve McDermott, there in New York, do you have a sense that the NFL sits these stars down before the halftime show and says, look, this is huge, we don't want politics here, leave it out, or no?
So there was some rumors flying around that the NFL had said that she wasn't allowed to speak out, and then both her party and the NFL came out and said, no, that's not true. You know, we're not going to place a gag order on Lady Gaga. Certainly last year with Beyonce, her political statement wasn't overt, but, you know, she came out. Her dancers were dressed similarly to Black Panthers. They made, you know, the female symbol on stage. So I think people are interested in seeing whether all of the controversy that created is going to keep the NFL and Lady Gaga from going out on a limb with something controversial this year.
Of course, the last time the Super Bowl halftime show was in Houston, where it will be on Sunday. We had this memorable moment. Justin Timberlake was there with Janet Jackson. Rock Your Body was the song. Performance ended with what was called a wardrobe malfunction. Timberlake tore off part of Janet Jackson's bodice to reveal her breasts adorned with a nipple ring. Here's the song. Let me rock your body. Come on and dance with me. You don't have to admit. You don't have to reform. Come on and dance with me. Let me rock you. Do, 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 do. Now can it hold to me? Talk to me, boy. No disrespect. I don't mean no harm. Talk to me, boy. I can't wait to get in my arms. Talk to me. And then, for just a fraction of a second before they cut the lights, there was the famous breast. That seemed to have, I mean, they denied it, but it seemed like it was planned. Are these performers looking to shock? Is that part of the, you know, who can go beyond the last one, or is that just once in a while?
I mean, I think that the FCC did their best to discourage that kind of
$500,000 fine. Yeah.
I mean, it changed how they viewed indecency violations. I think that the fact that we haven't seen anything like that since, and I also think the fact that that incident, like you could say, permanently hurt Janet Jackson's career. I think that really dissuades artists from going too far in their provocations. You know, when MIA took the stage with Madonna and flipped the camera the bird, that just kind of embroiled her in this really messy, you know, expensive legal drama that I don't think any other Super Bowl performer sees as, you know, something to chase.
Janet Jackson, here she was 2004 at the Grammys, apologizing for the wardrobe malfunction. CBS took a $550,000 fine from the FCC on that. Here was Janet Jackson.
MTV, CBS, the NFL had no knowledge of this whatsoever. And unfortunately, the whole thing went wrong in the end. I am really sorry if I offended anyone. That was truly not my intention.
Hey, but things recede into history. By 2015, it was Katy Perry, Glendale, Arizona, danced with sharks, surfboards, palm trees, inspired a viral meme of the dancing prop Left Shark, which is doing its own version of the choreography in that performance. Here was Katy Perry, 2015. Katy Perry, Super Bowl halftime, 2015. Maeve McDermott is with us, entertainment editor at USA Today. Anthony's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Anthony, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking my call. Just my comment about the halftime. I would like to see it return to show the artist's ability, their professionalism, and actually hear and enjoy the music. So often the focus in recent years has been more of a production, change of venue during the production, on the hype instead of on the ability and the music of the artist.
That's interesting. Anthony, I appreciate your call. Maeve, I mean, there has been a real emphasis on this big razzle-dazzle kind of almost music video performance in midfield there.
Yeah, there really has. And I almost agree in a sense. Some of my personal favorite performances, like, you know, I'll never forget watching the Bruce Springsteen one live. I think that a lot of the really great legacy acts were able to get up there. You know, they had some screens and some cool floors, but it really was focused on their performance. And Katy Perry is kind of the opposite of that. I mean, I think she did a lot of things right, but, you know, it was all huge props and, you know, Left Shark, which turned into an internet meme, and she ended it flying through the air on this lit up, you know, float thing. And there really has been a move away from just a bunch of people on stage playing their instruments. And, you know, it's for better or for worse, they're trying to attract 18 to 35-year-olds still, and maybe this is what the NFL thinks that they need to do to hold on to that demo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, on the other hand, when they just had Coldplay out there, it just didn't seem like it was hitting the mark, and of course they supplemented that with Bruno Mars and Beyonce. This was last year's Super Bowl, Santa Clara, California. Formation. Her dancers had Black Panther outfits. A lot of razzle dazzle. Here she was.
Okay, ladies, now let's get information. Okay, ladies, now let's get information. Prove to me you got some coordination. You just might be a Black Bill Gates in the making.
There was Beyonce last year at halftime. Of course, now she's pregnant with twins. David in Greenville, South Carolina. David, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. Love the show. So, I'm a big Gaga fan. Excited when they made the announcement. I really hope she does a great job. Although, I'd like for her to stay away from the political commentary. I think given the divisiveness of politics now, it'd probably be good for her. I mean, people watch the Super Bowl for escapism, right? But it's Gaga, so common sense tells me probably going to get political.
Could. Is Tony Bennett going to be there with her, Maeve?
So Pepsi announced that he is going to be in like an introduction segment. We're not sure if he's actually going to be showing up at the show. And I think that when we do look at whether Lady Gaga is going to be political, I think we do have to remember that this isn't the meat dress wearing provocateur that, you know, maybe is how she rose to fame. You know, over the last few years, she's really kind of redefined herself as a more mainstream accessible pop star. I mean, you think about, she's probably going to be announcing a tour right after this halftime show performance. So maybe she doesn't want to gamble on anything too provocative.
Though she's got a history, and it's interesting, even though lately we see her in, you know, Gold Lame and sort of Tony Bennett, American Standards and all the rest, but how would that play in a great big stadium, Maeve?
You know, I'm really hoping that she, you know, we've also seen her kind of giving her big pop songs a more like rock and roll feel when she's done them live. So I'm really hoping that she's going to go more, you know, big guitars, big productions, rather than doing something stripped down and jazzy, because, you know, the Super Bowl halftime performance is all about these like huge visuals, really big sound, and I don't think that something, you know, old Hollywood and jazzy would play well at all.
Well, she says no Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction coming. Lady Gaga says everything will be nice and tight. Maeve McDermott, entertainment editor at USA Today, thank you so much for walking us through a little halftime history here, Maeve. Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Listeners, enjoy the weekend, enjoy the game, enjoy the show. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.